Heritage Products presents The Giants of Philosophy, narrated by Charlton Heston. This is tape number one on Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel.
According to the British philosopher F.H. Bradley, where all is bad, it can only be good to know the worst. In this case, the worst is that everyone finds it very hard to understand just what Hegel meant. Few would disagree with the judgment of Bertrand Russell.
Hegel's philosophy is very difficult. He is, I should say, the hardest to understand of all the great philosophers.
Among philosophers, there's an old, probably apocryphal joke that's been told about a number of thinkers, but it fits Hegel to a T. The story has it that a philosopher was asked to explain what he meant in a particularly dense paragraph. He replied, "When I wrote that, only God and I knew what it meant. Now, God only knows." The historian of philosophy, Will Durant, alleges that Hegel once said, "Only one man understands me, and even he does not." The problem with understanding Hegel's philosophy is partly his style. Hegel seems unwilling to help the reader understand him. Also, his complex logic, which aims to encompass everything from a simple feeling to a total self-consciousness of what he calls the absolute idea, is difficult. Errol Harris of Northwestern University, who's written one of the clearest accounts of Hegel's logic, says,
"To the uninitiated, and even to many who are more fully acquainted with Hegel's writings, the intricacies and obscurities of his dialectic often seem impenetrable."
Harris recommends a willingness to learn and patience. Hegel's thought is novel. It's meant to reconcile opposed ideas, part and whole, causality and freedom, finitude and infinity. Hegel doesn't stop at taking Humpty Dumpty apart. He insists on putting him back together again. He said,
"Analysis is the process from sensation to thought. Those attributes which the object analyzed contains in union acquire universality by being separated. The error lies in forgetting that this is only one half of the process, and that the main point is the reunion of what has been parted."
Hegel's influence has always been something of a paradox. On the one hand, students and readers of his work universally complain that he's very hard to understand. And they're right. But his thought has been enormously influential. Somebody must have understood him. For example, Karl Marx's philosophy was much indebted to Hegel's ideas on the course of history, the development of self-consciousness, the nature of the state. Søren Kierkegaard, the Danish religious thinker, built his theory of the existing individual in direct opposition to Hegel's all-encompassing system. The 20th century French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre derived a philosophy called existentialism based entirely on Hegel's theory of how the self develops through freedom. There's also been a continuing debate about Hegel's theory of the state. Many have charged that it contributed to the development of National Socialism in Germany. Considering these consequences, it's fair to say you can think with Hegel or against him, but not without him. However we resolve this paradox, two considerations are uppermost. First, he explains reality clearly enough so other thinkers can profoundly oppose his basic rationalism and object to his system as a whole. Second, there are important differences in the way critics have analyzed Hegel's philosophy. Many interpreters have tried to set parts of his system against the rest, developing a negative type of analysis. Others have tried to develop some particular feature of the system in a positive way without committing themselves to Hegel's system as a whole. Hegel's life itself doesn't throw a great deal of light on his thought. Nevertheless, it's helpful to have some picture of the man behind this thought, especially if we're to understand how he came to command the philosophical scene in his own time. Perhaps we'll get a small understanding of why Hegel's legacy has not yet been exhausted. G.W.F. Hegel was born in Stuttgart in 1770. The new philosophical tradition of German idealism was very much in the making. Leibniz, a philosopher and mathematician, was opposing the physics of René Descartes. This was the beginning of modern philosophy. Descartes had said that spatial extension, The material and physical dimension of things is the essence of matter.
Each substance has a principal attribute. And the attribute of the mind is thought, while that of the body, matter, is extension. Mind and body are essentially distinct, one from the other.
But Leibniz claimed that force or power is the essence of matter. He hoped to overcome the unbridgeable gap between mind and matter in Descartes' philosophy. He argued that mind and matter both should be understood in terms of force. The movement was carried on in the 18th century by Immanuel Kant and Johann Gottlieb Fichte, and into the 19th century by Friedrich Schelling and by Hegel. To be sure, these men didn't agree on many things, but they consciously developed their thought in relation to each other, focusing on several common themes. The most important of these is that the self or subject is central. In one way or another, each philosopher saw in the self, in consciousness, and in self-consciousness, the key to understanding the ultimate nature of things. Their great insight, again expressed very differently, was the idea that subjectivity has a rational, objective structure. They believed that the subject is universal in character.